Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have a pretty interesting episode. It's, you know, the intention is to be very, very committed to getting the information out. We're going to be doing an episode on Tesla, and Tesla is one of these companies where, especially in the investment community, as an investment, people typically either love the stock, they hate the stock, and they're long and their price target's like 4,000, or they're short and they think it's a zero and they think it's a fraud. So, you know, I wanted to do an episode to kind of cut through the bullshit, as someone who doesn't have either a long or a short position in the company. And I'm bringing back my good friend, Brian Langus, from Canada. And, he's been on the show before, really, really smart guy. And, you know, I love getting really, really intelligent people, to come onto the show. He's actually a professional, business analyst, and actually analyzes the intrinsic value of businesses for a living up in Canada, and does work for a holding company out there. Honored, Brian, to have you on the show. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for having me back on. I had a great time the first time, and I'm sure we'll have a great podcast again.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start out with, you know, I think most people know what the company is, but why don't you just give a brief overview of the company, and the management, the founder, or the so-called founder, right? And we can get into that a little bit later, and go from there. And I'm gonna approach this as a very neutral party and just ask a lot of good questions and try to get to the bottom of things, if that sounds good.
Sure. So the company in question is Tesla, as you mentioned.
Yep.
And obviously the one of the founder there and the main guy is, as you know, Elon Musk. Elon Musk is in the media all the time. He's well known. He's in the media for good reasons. He's in the media for bad reasons. Right now, you might think the timing. I mean, we booked this podcast like 2 weeks ago, I think. You might think we're very opportunistic with our timing because right now he's going through a bad stretch in the media. But just so the listeners know, we didn't decide to do this today because of whatever's being said on Elon Musk and the stuff he has tweeted yesterday or 2 days ago. It just happened that he went on Twitter and he had another tantrum. Back to Elon Musk. I have followed his career for the last couple of years. Now I'm not a shareholder of Tesla. I'm also not shorting the stock. I don't know if I can invest in Tesla. Actually, I can't. I find the company to be uninvestable, but we'll talk about that later. But I'm an Elon Musk fan. I like what he's doing. I like his vision of having a world where we're getting off the a world where sustainable energy is the norm. The guy has bigger than life visions. He has dreams. He has goals. He has mission. They sound silly when you mention it. You know, and he wants humans on different planets, that kind of stuff. It sounds silly when you hear it. And it sounded silly when, in 2003, he started playing around with rockets. Everybody thought he's going to be a joke. He was not going to make it. And now he launched more rockets than anybody else. And he doesn't have a background in physics or whatever it takes to launch rockets. But the guy, I mean, I know a lot of people wants to bet against him, and I can see the case why. But at the same time, he's the guy that drives. He has a drive that like it's almost like fader is not in him. He's not coded with fader. He's been against the wall many times.
Failure? Is that what you mean?
Failure. That's failure. Right.
Okay, got it. The French accent occasionally, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Just wanted to double check.
I don't know if you read his, have you read his biography? The one by Ashley Vance?
I have not. No.
Ashley Vance? Good book. Really, really good book. I recommend it. The guy takes, he was going to write the book without Elon Musk help. He actually went to a lot of people that work at Tesla in the past, or SpaceX, or PayPal, or everywhere else, people that hates him, people that likes him, people that had a relationship with him. He went to everybody, did his homework, and Elon Musk was not on board. But he had a meeting with Musk. He said, look, I have all these people that say all these things about you, good, bad, all the things, and I'm giving you the opportunity to participate and to tell your version. So eventually he participated because he didn't want, I mean, that, he saw that the guy did his homework and he saw the guy knew what he was talking about. You know, it wasn't just a book that he met someone in the bar and he heard a story and decided to write one. No, I mean, that guy went really, really deep in his research, and Elon Musk respected the guy and decided to, contribute to the book. It's not a big book, but it's the one by Ashley Vance, and it's not one of those book where it's just all good things about Elon Musk. I also appreciate the fact that there's the dirt on him, the bad things, so it's balanced, but mostly more good than bad, obviously, but I think he tries to do a balanced approach to it. I wonder if he's ever going to do an update with all the stuff that's been coming out in the last couple of years. But, it's a good little read.
We'll get that in the show notes, that book.
For sure. Elon Musk has been described as a nicer Steve Jobs. So he has, you know, a drive like Steve Jobs. He doesn't have the people skills, but he's, he's a nerd. And he's also more refined than Bill Gates. So he's been described as nicer than Steve Jobs, because Steve Jobs had a bad reputation. And he's more refined than, let's say, Bill Gates. Bill Gates was always the king nerd on the block, but wasn't too good at selling things. Elon Musk's biggest skill, in my mind, is number one skill is selling. He can sell you anything. And that is reflected in the share price of Tesla today, where, you know, a company with barely a car or cars, financial constraint, operational constraint, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that stock is more valuable than, let's say, GM. So, I mean, it's interesting. It's a very, very interesting case study, and we can talk about that later, about the devaluation and the shorts and the bears. But about the guy, he has a cult following. People love the guy. He has his disciples, people that believe him. They'll give him money.
He has his what? And
how do you call that? Disciples. People
disciples. Disciples.
Disciples. Yes. So I just said French, and French is disciples. So
disciples. Oui, oui.
Yeah, there you go. He has his disciples, and people, they'll believe in him no matter what. He has this semi-quasi-religious thing going on about him that people will put their faith in him and their money, and he seems to buy that too. He seems that the more people that believe in his vision, the more he likes it, and the more he becomes that. In a sense, the media were saying at one point when the media was putting him on magazine covers and he was labeled as the superhero, the guy, the Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Tony Stark or something like that. They say that he was a real life Tony Stark, and I think he kind of embraced that. He took that and he ran with it. But right now he's a little bit of a bad stretch. I think it's back in February. he launched a car in space. Remember that? He had that big
rocket. and then in the car he had a miniature version of it.
Yeah, so he put this roadster in it, and he had that free publicity. Remember that? That picture of the car with the spaceman in it?
Yeah, that's right.
This was like all over the news, all over Twitter, internet, Facebook. Everybody saw the picture.
Stephen Colbert did a very funny thing on it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to watch that. What did he do?
I don't even remember. It was all the talk shows were doing funny shit about it.
Yeah, so he got so much publicity with it, and he didn't pay it, you know. No. I mean, there's so many car commercials out there that when I see one, nobody reacts to it. You become immune to it, right? Every car commercial says the same thing. Our new car is a little better. It's a little faster. It's a little better on gas. It's a little nicer. It's always the same thing, and this guy is throwing cars in space and this and that. He's doing stunts. I wouldn't be surprised that like a GM or a Ford go to their marketing firm and they're like, hey, we have a $5,000 budget. Can you do a stunt? You know, can you just something. Can you do something with all the money we give you? Because nobody's talking about a GM commercial. Nobody's talking about a Chrysler commercial, you know. And back in February, it seems to be the peak of his goodwill. And after that, people started focusing on Tesla and the Model 3 and the numbers and the financial and the operations and all the stuff that's been leaked in the media. He had that very weird back in May, that conference call. I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
He's been going after people, journalists, analysts, Reuters, CNBC. He's on Twitter fighting all the time.
Yeah.
He's one day he wants to go to Thailand and save the kids. The next day he wants to clean the water in Flint. He's running two or four companies. I mean, he's running Tesla, SpaceX. If you consider SolarCity, that's inside space Tesla now with two businesses.
And
now.
We should talk about the acquisition of SolarCity too, if that's something you'd like to talk about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can dig into that. So basically, he bought a business that had $1 billion of I was burning $1 billion in cash.
Let's get to that so we can go more into that in a little bit. Why don't we do that?
You want to do SolarCity?
In a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, what was I saying? He's running two or four companies. Mm-hmm. The Boring Company too. I'm not even sure what that is. I think he's digging tunnels. He's selling flamethrowers. Basically, his here's a French word for you. His raison d'être, he's trying to save the world. That's what he's doing. Mm. That's what he's doing. He's trying to save the world. He wants humans on other planets, and he wants to clean up the planet from oil. That's his raison d'être. That's this mission inside him that is driving him. Is it just a slogan? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe for people working there, maybe. But for him, I think he's something that he believes what he's saying. You know what I mean? A lot of corporate missions are large and nice, but I don't think anybody believes in them, right? It's just a corporate statement. A lawyer wrote it, and that's it. But now, I think he actually believes that he believes that.
I do want to say, Brian, that if you were to buy a flamethrower from the Boring Company, it says the Boring Company, and then it says not a flamethrower. Flamethrower sales are now complete. 20K flamethrower sold. And then it says in small print, fire extinguisher sold separately for exorbitant amounts of money. Taxes and shipping will be added at checkout. Additional customer fees may apply for international orders because of laws. International customers can receive a full refund if not happy with said fees. Before shipping, aspiring flamethrower aficionados will be sent a terms and conditions rhyme for review and acceptance. start shipping in shim in the spring, and then may not be used on Boring Company decorative. I don't even know what the hell that means. But then it says at the bottom, it says, buy an overpriced Boring Company fire extinguisher. You can definitely buy one for less elsewhere, but this one comes with a cool sticker, and the button is conveniently right above with like five eyes.
Okay. Did you buy one?
I unfortunately missed the opportunity.
He sold 20,000 of them. How much were they?
I'm not sure. But the Boring Company, that their main stuff is on like infrastructure and tunnel construction.
Yeah, he wants to build tunnels in LA and things like that, right? Like Hyperloop. Is that the Boring Company? The Hyperloop thing, the high speed magnet train or whatever it is.
I am not sure actually. No, you know, it is actually. Yeah, the Hyperloop is part of the Boring Company. So he raised $113 million for that in April.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyway, let's keep going.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have 24 hours a day like him. I have no clue where he gets the time to do all these things. And it is one of his critiques. Can he just concentrate on one thing? Can he just concentrate on making sure Tesla produce cars on time, meets the numbers? Can he focus on making sure that Tesla is profitable? Or, you know, like, I mean, he'll come out and say something like last week, I'm gonna clean the water in Flint. And the fanboys, the people that are Elon Musk fans, will say, oh, wow, well, that's awesome. Look, somebody's doing something about Flint. And then the critics will say, oh, look, it's a publicity stunt. He wants attention for himself. He's distracting, or he's deviating attention from the real problem that is his company, or et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, he's all over the place, you know, he's in one hand, he's very, very brilliant. He's a visionary. I think you could agree that the world needs more people like him that have that crazy profile, that Steve Jobs, that Steve Bezos profile of achieving and chasing dreams that there are larger than realities and actually achieving them. But these people at the same time are very flawed. Steve Jobs was very flawed. I don't know a lot about Steve Bezos. I can't comment on him, but Elon Musk is not perfect either. He has some flaws, and just like everybody else, he has his challenges. And I mean, I don't know. I'm actually worried about where Tesla's going now. He said he's sleeping under a couch or a desk. Actually, he said he was sleeping on the floor. That's what he said. That's what he told to Bloomberg. He said he was sleeping on the floor of the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the employees got him a couch. But then he said the couch was not comfortable and that he wore the same clothes for 5 days. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You see this and you wonder what is going on here. Like, you know, it sounds like Tesla is Elon Musk. So let me ask you this. Would Tesla be the same thing if, let's say, Elon Musk was not there anymore?
Well, what do you think?
No, absolutely not.
Of course not.
No. He is the company.
I think you knew the answer to your own question.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I do that all the time.
Me too.
Right now, he's in a fight with the media, especially big reporters, like the girl from I forgot her name, from Vanity Fair's, Bethany something. She does really good.
Bethany McLean? Huh? Was it Bethany
That's
McLean?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. she does really good reporting, and I think he went after her.
He did. Yeah. And she has said that she's gonna, you know, keep covering Musk.
Yeah. And there's another one at Business Insider, Mrs. Lopez, Lynette Lopez, I think. And she actually got a whistleblower or an insider at the company feeding her not so nice information. I think somebody said there was a I think it's Martin Tripp. If you Google it, he might have been him. Martin Tripp. He was a leaker at I have to double check this to make sure because it's gonna go on the internet. But I think I might get the wrong name here. But he was a former employee. I think Martin Tripp was a whistleblower.
Yeah, Martin Tripp.
Fed information. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a former Tesla employee. Filed a whistleblower tip with the Securities Exchange Commission, in which he alleges.
Okay.
So yeah, he filed this with the SEC, and he alleged that the company has actually lied about Model 3 production numbers and put unsafe batteries in the car. And the Washington Post reported this. And then when Tesla didn't immediately respond to a request for comment, but the company had previously denied Tripp's allegations about its production process and communication with investors. And then Tripp previously said that he was motivated to share company information because of safety concerns. So there is a Washington Post report about it. And there's no paywall on it, so I'll actually add this article as well to the show notes as well. I'm just going to make a note for myself.
I think the okay, so that might be different from the Business Insider, Lynette Lopez. I'm not sure if it was him feeding her information, but she got an insider at Tesla that said that Tesla was – you know how they were heading for that 5,000 a week car production by the end of June?
Yes.
So apparently they stopped doing some important safety tests, brake tests,
yes,
that are critical to, you know, apparently all car companies does these things. And she was attacked by Musk, I think, for that. She reported some information about this brake test that Tesla skipped to meet production numbers. And here's where it gets interesting.
I'll just say this too. 4 days ago, Martin Tripp's attorney posted a thing on Tesla saying, FYI, this is Martin Tripp's attorney. If any other Tesla employees out there have anything interesting to say, I suggest that you speak with him. If you're early enough in the door and speak with Martin, I assume, if you're early enough in the door, you'll make more than enough money to compensate for your soon-to-be worthless Tesla stock options.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's going down. I just threw down the gauntlet there.
Oh, you got a phone call.
That's okay.
I'm really – this is really, really interesting. This is a high-profile fight between fanboys, Elon Musk disciples, Tesla believers, Elon versus short sellers and haters. Now, I'm not long and I'm not short selling the stock. But this is a really, as an outsider, it's like watching a heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
A very high-profile fight on pay-per-view. And this thing's going back and forth.
You know, only a nerd would compare this to a heavyweight fight on pay-per-view. I'm just putting that out there.
the accountants versus the believers. That wouldn't sell. Anything with an accountant doesn't sell. So it's very interesting to see this go down, and you know, part of me really wants Elon Musk to succeed. I mean, I want him to, you know, produce 500,000 car, a million car a year, to have, you know, to be cut off oil, to be energy independent, to have a world sustainable energy, et cetera, et cetera. And part of me is looking at this, well, you need money to do all that. You need money to achieve all that. And also going on Twitter and attacking people and all these things is not helping you. He went from the Iron Man superhero, and now he's more like a supervillain. You know, there doesn't seem to be a day without some kind of controversies involving him. And, you know, his controversial outbursts, that's nothing new. He's always fighting critics, and he's been doing that forever. But right now, it seems like it reached another level. And if you can Google that, there's a chart of Elon Musk tweeting activity. I think it was reported by Zero Edge.
What was it?
And Elon Musk tweeting activity per month.
Got it.
So the amount of tweeting he's doing per month. And in 2018, it has exploded. Like, he's always on Twitter and more for the wrong reason. But, engaged.
You could debate that. I mean, you could say that part of his responsibility as CEO is to, you know, be bringing the message out to the people and, you know, rebutting any negative criticism. So I'm not necessarily going to say that's for the wrong reason.
So that's right. So he's engaging with detractors.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a reason why
he has to. You gotta understand, Brian. He has to, though, because a lot of Tesla, right, relies on the capital markets, right? And
correct.
If you know, it's not like they have free cash flow. It's just, you know, it's right. Not like a cash machine where they don't need to give a shit. So if investors get spooked and the general reputation of the company declines, they're gonna have a much harder time borrowing money or raising capital through the equity markets. And I could definitely see why he's doing that for that reason alone.
Well, that's it. That's the game right there. That's it. He's going to have – well, that's my opinion, and that's not Elon Musk's opinion. I believe, and a lot of analysts believe, that he's going to have to raise money soon. Mm-hmm. He said no. He said he's not going to – and he repeated more than once. He said, we're not going to have to raise money. We're going to be profitable in third quarter and the fourth quarter. He said that, and he promised that.
He's made a lot of promises, though, that he doesn't keep. That's one of the things with Elon.
Yeah. Well, that's part of why he might get in trouble, right? Because a lot of things he say is it – a CEO can say a lot of things, but if it's material, and that could have an impact.
It could have a legal impact, too.
Legal impact.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So now, I mean, he's saying a lot of things. And like you said, I think so. The reason why he's on Twitter and defending and this and that is probably because he's going to have to raise money soon. I mean, he's talking about a new model coming out next year, a new Roadster in 2020, another car in 2019, the Model Y. Is it Y? Yeah, Model Y. He wants to build a China factory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know if the Model 3 is going to eventually gonna be profitable. All these things, you know, all these projects are going to cost money. And like you say, he has nothing to show. GM can say, well, we don't care what people say. We're going to make $5 a share. You know, we're going to earn $6, $7, $8 earning per share. And that's what you can look at. And that's what investors can do. With Tesla, you don't have that. You don't have profits.
Right.
And you have this larger-than-life figure called Elon Musk. And, you know, he's going to have to raise money eventually, and he needs to do this from a position of strength. Now, if the short seller get the best out of it, and let's say the stock goes, what, 200-something right now, 310, 320, so it's moving a lot. So let's say it goes from $300 to $250 or less. The day it comes to raise money, there's going to be a lot more dilution. And it might have one of these spiral effect where if investor expects more dilution, well, it's going to, you know, the market expectation is going to cause the stock to go down even more. And then you're stuck in these, you're stuck in this loop, right? This feedback loop where a lower stock price is the cause of a lower stock price.
Correct.
And, you know, I don't think the bond, I had the price for the bond in 2025, I think last week. It was trading around $88 mm-hmm. with a yield of almost not too far from 8%. So, I mean, he can't go to the bond market. It's going to cost him a lot of money, you know, at least maybe 9 or 10% if he goes to the bond market. So that's really expensive.
What bonds and were you looking at in particular?
The one that expires in 2025.
Okay.
So it was issued at 5.3% and it was trading at 7.5 last year. I don't have it in front of me right now. Oh, here's an interesting debt stat.
What's that?
Tesla has $10 billion in debt, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And it's paying $150 million in interest each quarter. Do you know who else pays $150 million in interest every quarter?
Who's that?
GM.
That's interesting.
So... You got two car companies. There's a weird background noise, by the way. I was saying, yeah. So Tesla has about $10 billion in debt, and
And they have about $230 million due later this year, and then an additional $920 million next year.
Yes, they do.
Right.
What's
also interesting is Tesla says they don't need to raise more money, but Moody's has been downgrading their bonds too.
Yeah, they have. I think it's considered speculative and
that?
Subject to high credit risk.
Say that again.
It's Tesla's debt has been considered speculative.
Oh, speculative. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, so actually, I'm gonna quote Moody's here: speculative and subject to high credit risk. End quote. Yeah.
Right. So,
the unsecured debt has gone from B3 to CAA1, which is pretty shitty.
Yeah. So the debt this year.
I'm also just going to quote from Moody's: speculative, of poor standing, and subject to very high credit risk, and that's their unsecured debt.
But the market is still pricing these bonds at a good price.
Which is interesting because generally the bond market with these kinds of issues tends to be a little bit more efficient than equity markets with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of it. I mean, the debt that is due in 2025 is trading for about $88. So, I mean, the market still thinks that they'll get their money. Yeah. They're gonna get their money, and. I mean, they might. I don't know. We don't know now. But I don't think that the current coupon or the current yield is reflecting.
Well, they might be. You know, they might be. The bond could also just be reflecting that they're banking on Tesla to raise capital in the equity market so they can pay back the interest expenses. That, I mean, that's a possibility too.
Yep. Yes, it is. No, for sure. I mean. That's reflected in Tesla's share price, right?
Because if I'm Elon Musk and I'm trying to get inside his head, there's no way I'm going to allow a news article to come out saying that Tesla is not able to pay interest expenses on the bonds, because that would destroy the equity market, you know, the demand in the equity markets, which then makes it you don't even want to get into that position.
Well, I don't know why Musk is so against the idea of raising more money.
Honestly, if I was a shareholder, I'd want him to raise money at these prices.
Well, that's the thing, right? You have an overvalued stock price, which can be used as currency.
Exactly.
Why don't you just issue billions of dollars in stocks? Yeah, you might take a hit in the short term, but this company is dependent. The existence of this company is dependent on cash.
Right.
You know? And he has this dream of having a mass market EV car that that's costing so much money to the company. He's betting the company on it, really. He's betting if Tesla's going to make it or break it with the Model 3. And why don't you raise the money that you need to build a proper factory, not a tent, and, do what you need to do. It might take a couple more years, but if the capital market are generous like they are now,
right,
with him, he'll be able to achieve his vision. As long as the capital markets are believing in him, he'll be able to achieve it because he'll have the money that he needs. I don't know why he's like, no, I'm not going to need money. I'm not going to be profitable. All this. I don't know. I know he has his giant compensation package that he got the board approved, which, a lot of people are, from what I read, if the compensation package, which you probably read about in the media, if Musk achieve all the goals, he could head for a $55 billion payout if he achieves everything.
Yeah.
If, $55 billion, if Tesla reaches $650 billion in market cap, so about 12 times where they are today. Right now it's about $50 billion. And, so about 12 times the size of Tesla today. And one could argue that very well that Tesla's overvalued today. So there's a lot of work there. But if he achieves all his goals and numbers and all this stuff, that's the amount of money that he could go for.
Well, you got to imagine we'll know by the end of this summer what's going to happen.
Yeah. So he latched on to the $5,000 Model 3 car per week, and apparently they did achieve it at the end of June. They had this nice photo finish, and they apparently achieved it. Now the question is, can they achieve it? Is it sustainable? Can they do it week after week? And now he's talking about 6,000 cars Model 3 a week, because I'll tell you why these numbers are important. He has a backlog of 450,000 cars. Do you know what I'm talking about? People that put money down for a Model 3?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The people that – the Model 3 has about a 450,000 backlog. These are reservations, the people that put money down for a Model 3. So if he only makes 5,000 cars a week, let's say 400. So let's say he has 400,000 cars in the backlog, and he's only producing 5,000. So some people are going to wait a year and a half to get their car.
Correct.
So that's not, it's not interesting. And by the way, talking about the Model 3, the cars that are being pumped out right now are the more expensive Model 3. They are the ones that are selling for $50,000, $60,000, $75,000. Not the one that we hear in the media for $35,000, because when he made the big speech, the big announcement was, we're going to have a $35,000 Model 3. And eventually he might get to that, but right now it's more profitable to pump out, the more expensive model, because he needs the money. Here's where it sucks for a lot of people. A lot of people put that down payment or that deposit, like $2,000-$3,000, to get the base model, the $35,000 car. But they're going to have to wait a long time because Tesla is not actually building them. So let's see what happens with them. By the way, it's not, you know, have you ever read the history of Tesla? How it got started and all these things?
I have, but why don't you share for our listeners the story?
So like I said, I read the biography and they talk a lot about that. Tesla is really a story of extreme highs and extreme lows. So what we're hearing right now in the media, the short seller, the good news, the bad news, all this stuff, this is nothing new. This is pretty much Tesla's history. And just a quick stat for you right now. Do you know when was the last IPO for a car company?
Quite a while ago, I would imagine.
Yes, Ford in the 50s.
Yeah, okay.
And the last successful startup company, the last successful car startup company was Chrysler in 1925. So there's nobody since Chrysler that has succeeded in, you know, having a brand new American car company. A lot of them has bankrupt, including Chrysler. But I think Chrysler has bankrupt a few times, every 10 years it seems. But anyway, you got a couple of California guys, and one of the key guy here is J.B. Strobel. The name probably doesn't ring the bell, but he's the grandson or the great-grandson of the guy that started the Strobel Machine Company, which was one of the company that built one of the first internal combustion engine in the U.S. So he's Strobel here. He's one of the key guy. He had his master from the Stanford. He bounced around a few jobs, worked on different projects. Really smart guy. He was pretty much obsessed with everything electric. He wanted an electric car. He wanted an electric plane. And he did a lot of consulting on that stuff. He hung out a lot at Stanford with the solar car team. Because I think every year there's a team in the United States. Not a team, a race. I think a solar power car race in the United States. And he was contributing or hanging out with the guys behind that. But back in the early 2000s, the idea of having an electric car or anything clean energy was just, it wasn't trendy. You couldn't get money. There was no clean energy movement. It was mostly science projects, people dabbling around with the use of solar power and electric vehicles. But there was no serious idea or there was no serious, you know, nobody was like, hey, let's make a business out of it. It was mostly, you know, a hobby and, you know, just for idea of creating a proof of concept. Strobel, he met Musk in 2003, and Musk loved all his crazy ideas. And what made Tesla possible was the improvement of the lithium iron batteries, which you usually find in computers, laptops. The lithium iron batteries got much better over the years, and they're still getting better. That's what made it possible, and the big car companies really cashed onto that. So Musk gave some money to Strobel, so Strobel could play around his idea. Around the same time, around 2003, another group of California guys were working with the idea of the lithium iron battery power car, and that's Mark Eberhard and Mark Tarpening. These guys, Musk, J.B. Strobel, Eberhard, Tarpening, they're all little, you know, they're all nerds, they're all thinkers. These are guys with a background in taking things apart, putting it back together, playing around with it. They all have a background in that. And when they were playing around with the idea of making this, when Tesla was just getting on the ground or you had the Prius. Toyota came out with the Prius. I don't know if you remember that in 2003.
I remember it very well.
Yeah. So wealthy people started buying Toyota Prius. It was an ugly car, but it was an electric vehicle. And why? Because it was a new kind of status symbol, right? You could have a BMW, you could have a Lexus, and then the eco people will have a Prius. Actually, I think I was a hybrid, right? I don't think it was 100% electric. No, it was a totally, it was a hybrid. Yeah, it was the first big hybrid car. That's the Prius. Yeah, I remember that. And basically all these guys, Tarpening and Eberhard, they needed money to get the whole thing started. And they contacted Musk because, listen to this, a couple of years before, they met Musk at Stanford. And Musk had this vision of sending mice into space. And because he had this idea of sending mice into space, they had the impression that he'd be different, right? He'd be open to electric cars. So they met, and they're like, yeah, he agrees to fund him. He's the biggest shareholder now of Tesla. He's the chairman. And this puts him in a position of strength.
Right.
Because later on, Eberhard and Musk, they had a public battle, and they had some back and forth. And then after that, Musk called Strobel and is like, hey, you know, look, come meet Tesla, and he got the job. And today, J.B. Strobel, he's still there. He's a key guy at Tesla, and Eberhard and Tarpening are both gone. You know, if you went back, if you went to the Tesla office back in 2003, 2004, 2005, it was just a couple guys, you know, that were good at doing science fair projects. They didn't even turn to Detroit for advice.
Yeah.
You know, they did everything Silicon Valley way. That's what they did. They hired a bunch of engineers. They had a pipeline to Stanford because of JB. They could hire the best people, the brightest. And, you know, when you're young, sometimes it's not even about the money. It's about the vision, right? These guys were selling a vision. They were selling, look, we're going to make the coolest car. We're going to change the world, et cetera, et cetera. And the young people that, you know, some people work for free. They're like, yeah, I want to be involved in this. I want to join SpaceX. I want to join Tesla. And that's still going on today. The young people today, they don't want to go, you know, work for Goldman Sachs. No, they want to go to the cool company. They want to go to Google. They want to go to Facebook. They want to go to Tesla. They want to go to SpaceX. They want to be part
of the disruptors.
Yeah, that's right. You know, they don't mind working for a startup for no money. That's cool right now. That's what they want to do. Anyway, in 2006, the Roadster showed the public. They come out with the Roadster. So their first car, the idea is, hey, let's make an expensive car, but let's not make a lot of them. Let's just have a car so people can, you know, get an idea what we were about. And this was really cool because all the celebrities showed up. Governor Schwarzenegger showed up. Great publicity. Everybody's talking about it. The car, you know, they retail the car about, oh yeah, they can't sell cars yet. I'll mention why. But anyway, they had the strategy of the high price, low volume product. And then over time, they moved down, right? They will move down. We'll have, okay, now we'll have a medium price car and a little bit more volume. And eventually we'll get to the Model 3, which, you know, that was the strategy at the beginning and they have followed that. But the reason back then, so it was a new company and they weren't legally allowed to sell a car. I think you need, you know, a lot of approvals. But here's how they got around to selling the car. So they created this car club. They couldn't sell the product yet, right? It was just a display, just a prototype. So people had to sign up and sign up and be on the list. And, you know, price wasn't a matter because all these people were wealthy. They're all wealthy California people, Silicon Valley and all that, and the VCs and celebrities. So you had to join a car club. You had to join the Tesla car club. And to join for $100,000, you get a free car. That was the sales pitch. And that's how at first they got around, you know, building stores and getting government to stamp them, the government to get in the green light to sell cars. And you know, back then too, money was a problem. They didn't have a lot of money. They figured that, you know, they were gonna sell the car for $90,000, and it turned out that it cost almost $200,000 to build the car. So that's not good, right? Mm-hmm. But that's when the end of, and they had a lot of operational problems, financial problem. And Tesla was also in the media back then for good and bad reason. They were fighting. There was some gossips about them, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually, the CEO back then was Eberhard, one of the founder. And, you know, sometimes the founder is not always the right person to lead the company in the long term.
Right.
And eventually, Eberhard and Musk, they always battle. And Eberhard left, and then they had a bad public battle for a couple of years. He said that Musk had no right calling himself co-founder. Eventually, he caved in and said, yeah, Musk was a founder because Musk had all the money and the vision. And Tarpening left not too long after that. So Musk is one of the only original founder left there. And they're all, I mean, like I'm saying, his company's always strapped for cash, but they got lucky. They got really lucky. So in 2008, you got the financial crisis, and they need money. So Daimler acquires 10% of Tesla for $500 million. So that's good. That money comes in. So they have some kind of project where Daimler is very interested in having a Mercedes Class A electric. See how it might look like, how it might feel like. They also have Toyota also bought parts of Tesla, like 2.5 or 3%. I think they sold it off not too long ago. Then. And here's the big money. The big money came in 2009 when they got a loan from the Department of Energy. They got $465 million. So that was a lifeline. That money came in and was able to get Tesla on track. And they got lucky again in 2010. When Tesla bought the GM Toyota factory in Fremont, where they are now, where they're building the cars right now, that factory was worth $1 billion at one point. And it's cheap. They got it. Listen to this. They got it for $42 million. Okay? They got a $1 billion factory for $42 million. And the reason why, well, GM was in bankruptcy and they're trying to get out of it.
Right.
And I guess they had no use for the... the factory. So they had this string of good luck, one thing after the other, right? They got the $465 million loan. They got, you know, they needed a factory, so they buy one for $42 million. It's based in California near Silicon Valley. I think it's like 45 minutes away. So you know, they got all these things bang, 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 bang that works out for them. And then in 2010, they got the IPO. They raised a lot of money. Investors are excited. There's a lot of there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of buzz. And 2012, the Model S comes out, and that's when That's when Tesla becomes is taken seriously by the auto industry. So the Model S comes out, and it's named Car of the Year, right? I think Motor Trend names it Car of the Year. It's kind of unheard of. It's crazy what they have accomplished, right? This company barely existed, didn't have any money, and now they have the best car in the market.
Yeah.
And they also make electric cars very sexy because nobody was building electric cars. So when that car came out, there was a shift in the industry where, oh man, these guys are serious. They were heavily criticized. Tesla was heavily criticized by its competitors. But at the same time, they're like, okay, maybe we should do something about this electric car thing. And you can see what you want about Tesla. all the other cars are now, all the other car manufacturers are reacting to Tesla. Even though Tesla is what, GM sells 10 million cars a year, and Tesla can barely sell 100,000, 200,000, but now they're all reacting to the little guy. That's something, you know what I mean? They see that, okay, electric car is the future, and we must address that market. So what's going on now? You got Porsche, Jaguar, BMW, Audi. They're all coming out with their own EV car, and they're nice cars. I don't know if you've seen some of them. Yeah, they're very, very nice car, and these are real competitors to Tesla. And these are cars built by what you would call like real car companies. You know, they have a plant that actually make cars all the time. So that's gonna remain to be seen what's gonna happen with how Tesla reacts to all these new competitors. Did you know that Google almost bought Tesla?
I did.
In 2013?
Yeah.
So Tesla was out of cash again
When Musk, he reached out to Larry Page.
Yeah, right. So every other year Tesla's out of money, right? And so they have the models that came out. They have all these reservations because people have to put money down, a deposit, to be able to buy the car. But when you have a deposit, it doesn't mean it's a sale, right? You still have to convert that deposit into a sale. So they were cash strapped. People were getting anxious about the Model S not coming out on time, or if the company would survive. And also people heard about the new features, because I don't know how you know how it works. The cars are not released yearly, right? They don't have a 2011, 2012, 2013. They have a Model S, and they keep improving the car. So the new Model S that comes out today is a little better than the models that came out, let's say, 6 months ago.
Right.
Or a year ago. It has more sensors, better technology, that kind of stuff. So people know that. So they kind of, they wait, right? They wait for the next model or the improvement in the model to come out. So they delayed. They're delaying their purchase. And by delaying your purchase, Tesla has no money coming in. So that's not good. So they got everybody working at Tesla, the secretary, anybody, the legal accountants, to start making phone calls to convert the deposits, the reservations, into sales. And during that time, Musk, like you said, he's friend with Larry Page at Google, and he wasn't sure the company would survive. So he struck a handshake deal with Page on Google. That for Google to acquire Tesla, and you're a busy man.
Yeah.
A popular man. Was that Elon Musk calling?
God forbid.
Yeah, Google had a handshake deal to buy Tesla for $6 billion at the time. So. You know what, $44 billion less than what it's worth today. So that could have been interesting.
Yeah.
To see Tesla, you know, as one of Google's products. That would have been really interesting, because Google has the money and they have a lot of smart people working there. That would have been an interesting experiment, because I know Google's working on the self-driving, right? They got the Waymo.
Mm-hmm.
Waymo, is that what it's called? And apparently it's really good technology. It would have been interesting, but Musk had all these requirements, right? He wanted to be on in there 8 years. He wanted Google to contribute $5 billion in capital, because he needed a factory expansion. And he wanted a promise that Google was going to mass market a model, right? Because his big thing is to mass market an electric vehicle that's affordable for people. But during all these negotiations, remember all these salespeople calling? Well, the sales started to come in, and the money started to come in, and Tesla was saved. and the stock went from $30 to $130, and now you know the history.
Right.
You know the rest of the story.
And then they paid off that loan.
They paid off that loan. And the short sellers are still mad to this day. I mean, short seller, I've been after this stock for years. They've been betting for this company to collapse for a long time, and they're not winning. They're not winning. No matter what, this stock does not go down.
Right.
That's a story. I don't know. Did you want to talk about Solar City or another angle of this?
Yeah, well, let's go into the actual financials, you know, current financials and the business today. And as part of that, we can also talk about Solar City.
Right.
So why don't we actually go to Solar City first and talk about how that, you know, what they were doing, how that came about, and then this deal that, Tesla did with Solar City.
You're probably more familiar with Solar City than I am. Here's one I know. I know it was run by his cousin. His cousin were running it. Elon Musk was funding the company, but I don't think he was working there. But he was the main. I think he was an important shareholder. And I believe when Solar City folded inside Tesla, a lot of people screamed because Solar City was this cash-strapped, cash-flow-negative company.
Right.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think they were losing like $1 billion a year, or they were on the web losing $1 billion a year. And Musk bailed them out, really. That's what happened. The short seller took the short seller were after that company. They thought it was going to go to zero. The bonds were going to default, et cetera, et cetera. And Tesla basically bailed him out. And, again, one of these things where the short seller loses again against Elon Musk. Now, it doesn't mean that the short sellers are wrong in the long term. Solar City is still inside Tesla. And it's not cash flow positive. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. What's your take on the whole thing?
Well, it was interesting. I was listening to Jim Chanos. He had talked about it. And I just pulled up an article from Fast Company. This article, one of this came out, I think it was about a year ago. Let's see the date on this. It was June 7th of 2017. And Chanos is quoted in here, and it actually says, hedge fund manager Jim Chanos, who had shorted Tesla and Solar City, called the acquisition, quote, a shameful example of corporate governance at its worst, a bailout of Solar City that, quote, strikes us at just the height of folly. And, you know, the article goes on to say, 3 weeks after Musk's presentation, 85% of shareholders approved the Tesla-Solar City merger, an outcome even more impressive considering that the first solar roof tiles wouldn't be installed on a real customer's home for at least another 7 months. The ones atop the Universal Studios homes weren't even functional. And, I'll put this article in the show notes as well, but it's interesting, right? So it says, even so, within Tesla, there were serious doubts about the merger. Quote, there was almost no understanding for what SolarCity was inside the broader company, and that includes Elon, says a knowledgeable source. Quote, they didn't even understand the business. Yet Musk is famous for mastering information quickly, and again, who's going to bet against him? If he's wrong, Solar City could prove to be a serious strain on Tesla's resources. Solar power might be an undeniable part of our future. The industry created double the amount of jobs as coal did last year and accounts for nearly 40% of new electric capacity added to the grid, more than wind or even natural gas, but Solar City itself isn't. And this was very interesting. In the last reported quarterly earnings before the merger, SolarCity had seen a 26% year-over-year decrease in its megawatts installed, a key growth metric of solar power. So it was just it was peculiar that, you know, essentially, you know, SolarCity was losing money and probably weren't going to survive.
Right.
And, you know, Tesla, now the shareholders approved it. I wouldn't have approved it if I was a shareholder. And you look at a company that needs cash and they're probably overpaying for a company that's bleeding cash. It seemed like he was bailing out, you know, him and his cousin with company money. That's what it came off like.
That's what it came off like. But the way he sold it, he sold the idea of a bigger vision, right?
Yeah. So here's the problem, right? He sold it as, you know, there's all these synergies, right, and all that stuff, right? But
yeah.
this is the problem that I've seen with that is SolarCity isn't the only company doing these things. And to my knowledge, they don't have any kind of special patents, right? And that goes with a lot of Tesla, just a lot of Tesla in general, right? Is, you know, what's going to happen to the company when all this new competition starts coming to the market? You know, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, Tesla, you know, Tesla, people think Tesla is a computer on wheels, right? They say they got technology, software, all these things. It's not like GM is sitting there and, you know what, we're just going to stay old school. No, these guys are reacting to market demand. And the demand is we want clean cars. So GM is also selling the big trucks, but it is also going to be selling clean cars. They have the Bolt, they have other models.
I'm just looking at articles that I've kind of collected, and I mean, there's way too many to list. But like, I can go on, you know, Chevrolet's website. They had the Chevy Bolt, right? All new electric. BMW to introduce the electric 3 Series. That was in September of last year. Daimler investing $11 billion in cars, Mercedes, Porsche, Hyundai, Volvo, Toyota, Ford, the electric Kia Stinger GT to rival Tesla Model 3. There's an article about that. Infiniti with Nissan technology by 2020. Nissan, Renault, and Mitsubishi are going to be sharing an electric car platform together. Maserati is going to be having an electric car, and then
so who's not?
that's the whole point, right? And then even in China, where Tesla is, you know, expanding, right? You know, all these companies are doing stuff in China,
correct?
As well, and then you can say, well, what about autonomous driving, right? It's not just electric. Well, Audi, Mercedes, Cadillac, GM, Mercedes is a teaming up with NVIDIA to bring artificial intelligence to the car market, you know, this year. NVIDIA and Toyota are collaborating. Audi and NVIDIA are collaborating. Volvo and another company called Autoliv are teaming up with NVIDIA. So NVIDIA, you know, is doing all this stuff. Waymo, which you've talked about before, they're collaborating with Lyft. There's also another company called Nutonomy that's teaming up with Lyft. There's BMW, Intel, Mobileye, and Delphi developing autonomous driving for multiple OEMs. Even Baidu is doing an open source autonomous driving technology. BlackBerry, Samsung, Hitachi, Mitsubishi Electric. I mean, the list just goes on. And then for car batteries, right, which is, you know, again, another thing that Tesla likes to talk about. Well, we have Samsung, LG Chem, Panasonic, GM, the Daimler Gigafactory begins. I have an article. This one is from AutoNews.com. This was posted on May 22nd of last year. German Chancellor Angela Merkel will break ground at €500 million, so $543 million plant near Berlin on Monday that will assemble lithium-ion energy storage units for Daimler. The factory marks the arrival of battery-making gigafactories in Europe that will challenge Tesla. I mean, you hear about this stuff all the time.
China BYD, you know, there's an article from China BYD because I follow BYD. They're literally, the article is China BYD is taking aim at Tesla in battery factory race. I mean, literally every step of this production process, they have competition. So just some of the competing battery storage companies, you have Panasonic, Samsung, LG, GE, BYD, AES, Mitsubishi, NEC, Hitachi, ABB, Saft, Energisys, GS, Yuasa, E.ON, SolarWatt, Daimler, Schneider Electric, Sona Batterie, Kokam, Sharp, Nissan, the list goes on, right?
So you just answered your own question.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I thought the whole deal was bullshit. There's even for charging networks. There's a ton of these companies are also doing charging networks as well. So, I don't really know.
Right.
I don't even see what competitive advantage Tesla has at all, honestly.
Well, right now they have the advantage of being the cool one, right? The first one, the sexy one.
Yeah, but remember, you know how Warren Buffett, he has a whole thing where he says in capitalism, it's, you know, you're like, he uses an analogy of like you're in a crowd, right? And you go on your tippy toes and you're the tallest, but the moment you go on your tippy toes, everyone else gets on their tippy toes and then you're back.
Yeah.
Right? So,
exactly.
So everyone knows how cool Tesla is. Like, that's not a secret. You know,
yeah.
Where if anything, you could say Amazon, Jeff Bezos, right? Who I put personally in a very different category than Elon, in some regards. The brilliance of Jeff Bezos is he was able to delay the tippy toe process, right? So he'll bring something out to market, and you don't really understand how good of a business it is until it's too late.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Tesla, I mean, it's brilliant. You could do a whole episode on Amazon and how he's done that. But with Tesla, I mean, you know how cool the cars are. There's nothing surprising about that. And, you know, these other car companies, they do have the capabilities to make cars that are going to be just as cool and start mimicking a lot of the features that Tesla's created. So this is a business where I don't see being the first to market is a competitive advantage at all.
Well, you don't have much of a moat, right?
I don't think you have any moat.
So you're really, what he's doing eventually, it's just going to be another commodity. It's going to be a commodity with a sticker Tesla on it.
Right.
You know, everybody's going to catch up to them. Everybody's going to have their own electric car. Everybody's going to have their own version of autonomous driving. And Tesla is just going to be part of the game.
Yeah. Now you could say, and I don't know that the technology fully behind this, but you could say that you could potentially have some moat with autonomous driving if you're years ahead of the R&D, right?
Well, here we're talking about a car company, but here's what happened when they bought SolarCity. They went from a car company to something else. Because yes, they make cars, but now they make roofs. They sell battery packs. So we're focusing on the cars, and everybody else is focusing on the cars. But let's play the Tesla vision here, right?
Sure.
They have this master plan thing, the Tesla master plan part two, which is available on their website.
Yep.
And here's what it said. Tesla, here's what they want to achieve. Tesla as a fully integrated, sustainable energy company and mass market electric automaker. So let's take that sentence. Sorry. Fully integrated, sustainable energy company. So what is that? Is that the roof connected to the battery pack connected to the charger connected to the car, and everything connected to the car? Is that what it is? And you're able to sell power to the grid, back to the grid? And I think that's the first part. And the second part is mass market electric. Well, that we know, mass market electric car, that's the Model 3 and the other models. And here's what he said. If all of these milestones were to be achieved, Tesla will have meaningfully achieved its mission of transitioning the world to sustainable energy, and will have become one of the most valuable and successful companies in the world. This is our ambition. So that's a nice little mission, right?
I mean, it's a very nice mission.
Right? And if you break it down, so what it is, it's crate stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage, expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segment. So they're doing that. They're one and two, they're doing that. Develop a self-driving capability that is 10 times safer than manual via massive fleet learning. Okay, that's AI. Enable your car to make money for you when you aren't using it. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so one is the roof, the battery pack. Two, it's make a bunch of cars, different models for everybody. Three is the tech, right? So develop self-driving capability. Everybody's kind of working on something similar to that. And the trend, the industry is going towards that. It's not just Tesla, like you said. The fourth one we haven't talked about is enable your car to make money for you when you aren't using it. So it's kind of like car sharing.
Yeah, then they actually have that right now.
Oh, they do?
There's it's a service where say you're not going to be using your car for a week or something, you can actually lend it out and get like a daily rate on your car for someone to borrow your car for the day. So you can imagine with autonomous driving, that becomes way more efficient because the car can drive to someone's house.
And is Tesla offering that or a third party?
Right now?
Yeah.
I looked at it like 3 years ago. It was a company doing it.
So there's like a third party app you download and people, it's like car matchmaking.
I don't remember if it was an app or not. I'm not even sure. I just remember seeing it and I could get like, you know, $40 a day for my car if I wasn't going to use it, but I use my car.
But no, the idea is interesting because I went to a presentation once on autonomous driving and the future of driving. That's a couple of years ago. So I'd like to see that presentation updated. I think it was in 2015 and it was like mind blowing. And the guy was saying, like, it's crazy, right? You buy a car and it sits in the driveway for what, 23 hours a day? Mm-hmm. You know, do you use it an hour a day, 30 minutes a day? I don't know. I mean, most cars just sitting there doing nothing.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, the future, I don't know if it's 10, 20, 15, 30 years, that won't happen anymore. Cars will always be on the go and then you just get on it. And, that's going to change the way cities are designed, parking lots, homes, and the way it's going to be the next way where now we're in our car, we're driving. Now in the future, you're not going to be driving it, right? It's going to be autonomous driving. So you're going to be in your car, you can work. So productivity is going to go up. You're going to have more money, insurance. You don't need to buy insurance. You need to buy a car. You're just going to rent it. You can watch a movie, sleep, and you know. So it's going to change a lot of what we know now. Just like the car changed, you know, got rid of the horse, this might just change the way we do things. But anyway, we got sidetracked here.
Yes.
We got sidetracked a little bit.
That's okay. So let's get to the business model of Tesla, and let's talk a little bit about their financials and go from there.
Right. So Tesla is a fast-growing company. They're growing really fast. I mean, the last quarterly numbers, the one that came Q1 that came out, they had $3.4 billion in revenues. That's for one quarter. I think they're aiming for $12 billion this year. So they're growing really fast. And also, if you look at their gross profit, I was reading that you can't compare Tesla's gross profit to or their margin to, let's say, a GM or a Ford or Toyota this well, because they report theirs a little differently. One, there's a bunch of other things included in there, like the other services they offer other than cars.
Yep.
And two, they don't have the dealership networks that GM and all the other company has to support. So when Tesla say we have, let's say, I don't know, a 20% gross margin, well, it's or 10% higher than the competitors. You can't compare. It's not apple to apple. It's orange and apple. So you can't compare it because they calculate it differently. So that's one thing. But right now, I mean, the interesting number that people want to see, the company's losing a lot of money. They're burning a lot of money. And so the idea here is, look, people are like, okay, they're not making money, which is fine, because they're building plants, they're growing, they're investing. So you can understand that they're not making any money. The problem is will they make money? And Elon Musk say, yeah, they will. And other people say, well, how? We don't see it. So that's going to be interesting to see. So and while we're talking about cash burn, they were sitting at around $2.5 billion. That's their liquidity at the end of Q1. And they still expect to spend another $3 billion. So that's more what they have in cash. And like I said, Musk say, we're not going to raise money. So where's this going? I don't know. I really don't know. Do you believe Musk and say the company won't need any money? Or is he gonna pull another bunny out of the hat where, hey, we have a new car model and please put up another deposit and then you get another 500,000 people putting deposits. So he gets another $400 million, $500 million in an interest-free loan. And if you try to work the numbers, how are they going to pay that debt? It keeps growing. He hasn't explained how he was going to make money. And they're burning cash at a much more rapid pace than the previous quarter. But again, same time, they're trying to achieve production goals.
Right.
So, quarter two, I don't know when the numbers come out. So they might be really ugly. It might be one of those catch and sink quarter where it's going to be another ugly quarter. But then, people don't care about that apparently. So they're going to put their eyes on Q3 and Q4. So that Q2 is going to be really interesting to see where they are, because that's when it's going to set the tone for the rest of the year, I think.
And Elon Musk has said they'll be positive free cash flow in quarter 3, yeah, and quarter 4.
That's right. He's banking on improved Model 3 production. He said, if they execute their plan, they'll achieve it, and he mentioned it more than one time. So I think it's a goal that he's taking seriously. I don't know, man. Like I mentioned, I think they're gonna raise capital. Right. He has a lot of obligations coming up, and he has all these big projects. And it's the old joke, right? What's the old joke? There's three types of people. Those who are good at math and those who aren't.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people that are short sellers are numbers people. They look at the numbers and like, that can't be done. This company is going to fail. And they were saying that when the stock was at $30, at $50, at $100, $200, now it's over $300. And I know these people are some of them are sitting on a lot of massive losses. They're very emotional. And anything you say about the company is going to be, manipulated, spin, exaggerated in one's interest. So, a short seller is going to say something, that's a problem. They'll scream. But this company is still there. And yeah, it's not going down for whatever reason.
All right.
So it's very, very dangerous if you want to short it. They might be right in the long run. But, how long are you willing to sit on the short? That costs money. And a guy like Jim Chanos, he's sitting on it, and I don't know, it's not working out so far.
All right. Now, let's talk about the valuation
of the company too. And we should also talk about the long and the short thesis as well.
Right. So Tesla is a $50 billion market cap. It's a $50 billion company. Stocks trading over $300. Obviously, you know, nobody cares about the PE. This thing's trading at an astronomical number. If you look at the firm value, just over $60 billion, I believe. Yep. So, I mean, if somebody was going to buy the company, right? Let's say like another Google shows up. What do you have to pay with that thing? Like 60 GM's at a $50 or $55 billion market cap. Tesla thing's just over that. Would you pay a premium for this company? And when you buy a GM, you know what you're buying, right? You got profits, you got free cash flow.
Let's say this company was profitable, right?
That's good news.
But even if they were profitable, right, at a $50 billion market cap, what would you say, 7 to 10% operating margin? Just assume, right?
Right. So I think a guy that has a really really interesting take on the valuation is a valuation professor, Aswath Damodaran. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
I have not. No, is he Indian?
No, he's an Indian American. I think he has an Indian background.
Okay,
but he's in America. He's a professor at New York University. I might be wrong about this, but NYU. Yeah, he's considered the dean of valuation.
Huh.
All right. Okay. So he has books on it, and he has a very interesting take on Tesla. So he said, because people are like, oh, is it overvalued? Is it cheap or whatever? He's like, look, let's do a little bit of reverse engineering. Mm-hmm. To get the numbers that you have today to validate Tesla's $300 stock price.
Yep.
Here's what you need. All right? He works it out that way. You need $100 billion in revenues in 10 years. That's what he worked out. He has if you go on his blog and his website, he has all the models. He has the model, the DCF. So he worked it out. He's like, you need $100 billion in revenues. You need to produce 1 million cars a year. All right? So you're going from 100 or 200,000 a car to 1 million car a year.
And you're essentially making, like, what, $10 billion a year in profit?
Yeah. And that's what he's going for. And and you need margins. You need tech company margins. So you need to $100 billion. You need the margin of a tech company. You need to invest money you need to invest a lot of money to get your car production from 100,000 to 1 million.
Okay.
But see, no, I know, right? So Musk say he found a new way, right? He's talking about machines building machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. He said he's going to have this alien dreadnought, this crazy factory. He knows how to build cars better than everybody else. He doesn't want to do it the Detroit way. They don't know what they're doing. So he said he found a new way, and it's all machine related. And so far, we haven't seen any of this. And so far, anything of robot he has used has backfired. I think he went back to humans. But again, in Musk's side, he has a history of pulling off impossible.
Yeah.
So, and also, you know, the BMW has the best car margin in the industry, okay? The operating margin of BMW is sitting at 9.89%.
Yeah.
This is the best. The average car is about 5%, the auto margin. That means that Tesla will need to have margins better than what BMW is at least, you know, like 12%. That's what we're talking about here. And also, he's assuming that Tesla needs to invest more efficiently than the sector. So right now, you know, I don't know if you heard, but the car companies are not earning their cost of capital. There's a really good presentation on that. I'll try to email it to you one day. But the car companies barely meet their cost of capital. And the average auto company makes $1.25 on every dollar invested. So that means Tesla needs to do better. And the number he worked out that Tesla will have to deliver about $2.25 in revenues for every dollar of capital invested. So that's how you get to the numbers of Tesla today.
Yep.
Okay? It sounds really good. They have to achieve a lot of things. He might be wrong a couple of numbers, but like I say, if you go on his website, he worked out the numbers, how to get to that. And it's fun to see an actual person work out the number. It's good.
Yeah.
Because most bull cases, so let's talk about the bull case. Have you heard of Ron Barron?
Yes.
So Ron Barron is a very, he's a very successful investor. He's been around for a while. He's made his money in small stocks. So what he did, he would buy small companies and wait for them to become big companies. Mm-hmm. He became a billionaire along the way. He's very good at what he's doing. And his trick is holding them for a long time. And he also had a big, nice conference of year in New York. Anyway, he's always on CNBC and Bloomberg and all that stuff. And he loves going on and talk about Tesla. And his firm, Barron Funds, has over 1 million share in Tesla. So he's a big Tesla bull. And he's claiming, he said this on television, he said that he's going to make 20 times his money. And his average stock price is $220, and he's going to make 20 times his money. And he's very confident about this. Now, I this is not some nut job. This guy has a lot of success. He's been at it since the 80s. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not just somebody throwing numbers. He said that he's going to make 20 times his money. And he has made 20 times money with other companies in the past. So his main thesis is this. It's less about cars. It's less about like Tesla meeting numbers. It's more about the big picture. He has a very interesting view. He said that – here you go. He believes that all cars one day will be electric cars. So, I mean, I kind of believe that too, right? I think we're going the electric cars way. So there's 200 million cars in the U.S., and one day they're going to be all electric. And there's about 17 million cars that are produced in the U.S. So one day they're all going to be electric. Tesla has a head start. And Tesla is apparently to him is years ahead of everybody. And the bigger picture here is the grid, because it's not just a car company, right? They're what's it called? An integrated energy sustainable company or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The big key here is the grid. If all the cars, if you have 200 million cars that are going electric, the grid can't provide because you're gonna have to charge, right? The grid barely provide today. The electric grid today are underinvested, undercapitalized. They need to be, they need to be improved. And if you got all these cars coming in the next 10 years, the grid's not going to be able to provide properly. And because Tesla has the roof and the battery pack and the charger and the car, they are in a strategic position to take advantage of that. So the batteries and the roof, this is Tesla's main advantage. Anyway, I'm the one saying it, but when you hear him talking about it, it's pretty interesting. and he threw his number. And this guy has, he has built a name for himself, and he's throwing number. He said the stock's going to be $500 to $600 next year, 2019. And he says it's going to hit, $1,000 in 2020. So, I don't know. I know it's going to be $70 billion in revenue, $10 billion in profit, 1 million car a year, plus the batteries and the solar. So that's his case. I mean, I give him credit for going on TV and laying out all the numbers and how he thinks that's going to happen. So that's the bull case. And Tencent, the Chinese tech giant.
Mm-hmm.
They invested in Tesla also. They bought 5%. of the company for $1.8 billion. And there's also other people. There are big bulls. They see that they look. They don't provide as many numbers. Like the ARK CEO Catherine Wood, she's also on TV all the time. She said that Tesla is going to 4,000 out, and she has a long term view. And she doesn't provide much detail, but she see like Tesla. How you have software as a service. So she sees transport as a service. It's going to have tech margins. And she said that Tesla has all the best software people, all the best engineers, and that Chrysler, GM, Ford, and all the other guys have nothing on them. Like, they're way ahead of the game. It's less about building. It's less about having car builders, and now it's going to more of a software game. Like, it's better to have programmers than to have car builders.
Yeah.
So it's that's the case. That's the bull case. Ron Barron, he made his name. He's a billionaire, and he made his shareholders a lot of money. For him to go out there and being a big Tesla bull and they have the numbers, hopefully he's right. Hopefully that works out for him. And as you mentioned, how about this? Before we go in the bear case, what do you think of the bull case for Tesla?
I have no idea.
So what was that?
I have no idea.
Oh, you have no idea. Okay.
There's a reason I'm not buying the stock and I'm not shorting the stock.
Yeah. The stock, the stock is priced for
total perfection. Something
total better than perfection. Aswad, he laid out the numbers. Here's how you achieve the current valuation.
Okay.
And here's the margins, and here's how many cars you need, and here's how you reinvest the money, and here's how the returns you need on that money you invest. Blah, blah, bang, 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 bang. Can you – I don't buy it. So I don't think everything will have to happen perfectly for Tesla.
Here's the reason, and I actually don't short at all, and this is why I say I don't know, is, you're saying it's priced for better than perfection, but perfection is always how we deem perfection, right? You could make the argument that Amazon a long time ago was priced for better than perfection, right? Could you make that argument?
Yes,
and what happened was better than what most people imagined for the company, right? Most people did not envision what Amazon would look like in 2018, and the numbers it would be producing, its cloud business, right? So.
Yeah.
So, if Tesla in the future has this, some crazy competitive advantage with AI technology and machines building new machines, and their rate of growth is exponentially growing, exponentially faster than the other companies, and now they have some new patent on something, right? Like, so it would be better than the mental models that what you're deeming as perfection and you're coming up with your head. Now, I'd put the chances of that happening at more than 1%. Is it 20%? Is it 5%? I don't know. But the problem with shorting is that, all it takes is one or two of those things to actually reach that above perfection state, if you want to call it that, and you're fucked. Right. You're totally fucked. I think it's a very hard game to play. And if you're right most of the time, and you get one or two really, really wrong, that can potentially ruin all the other returns combined.
Well, short selling is a very, I don't know, there's a whole moral dilemma around it. You know, like, you kind of wish for something to fail. You know what I mean? You're betting. You want something to fail. You want him to fail. I don't know if it's something I'm comfortable with it.
I'm comfortable with it.
Well, honestly,
you know, if there was a company that I'm pretty damn sure there was a fraud in, I'd be comfortable shorting it.
Right. Okay. It's a thing. Here's a keyword: fraud.
Well,
right?
Is Tesla a fraud? Jim Chanos would say that Tesla is basically a fraud in a Ponzi scheme.
Some people will argue that. That's the bear case, right?
I don't want to misquote him, so I think that's what he's been saying. But there are people that see what Elon Musk is doing is a total scam.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's a scam, it's a pyramid scheme, it's been labeled many, many nasty things.
And why don't we go into the short thesis? We'll say what you're going to say, but we should go into that too.
Yeah. So I am. By the way, I have nothing against short selling if you're uncovering a fraud. Now you're doing a service to society, right? Now it's a question: is Tesla a fraud? And some people made some very interesting arguments. Jim Chanos is probably the most famous bear on Tesla out there,
and he has a very good track record at shorting.
Amazing track record.
Yeah.
Amazing. He might be. You know, one of the top king out there. I mean, you hear short seller pop up here and there, but for that long, like, he's been around for a long time now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's been at that game for a long time, and this is a very hard game. I think he was doing it in the 80s. I'm not sure. Like, I don't remember his full story, but I think in the 80s he started doing it. But I think his most famous call was Enron.
Yeah.
He shorted Enron and he made a case for it. Valiant, I think he pointed out Valiant too. And when he talks about fraud, I don't know if he called Tesla a fraud, but he say it shares some of the elements that he's seen at Enron and Valiant. And that is the huge number. He say he has two pages of high-level senior executive departures. So these are your top people, right? Your financial guy, your accountant, your top of engineering. And so you got all these weird, you know, you don't see that. I keep going back to GM. I don't know why. But you don't see that at GM. You don't see, you know, new CFO, new guy, new leader of this every, almost – couple of times a year. There's so much turnover. Now, I was quoting Ron Barron earlier. I was talking about Ron Barron. He was asked about that. That's the bull guy, right? He was saying that, that's not a problem because Tesla is a different kind of company. They work hard. They do long hours. That's the other thing, but I don't know. Chanos, he also mentioned a competition, you know.
The what?
Which is Audi, Jaguar. Competition.
Oh, competition.
Yeah, that's it.
Got it.
Yeah. So you look it up. They're making a nice car. The Model S, it's 2018, so it's 6-7 years old, going on 8. Chanos claimed that Tesla is behind in autopilot technology. GM has Cruise that I don't think is getting enough credit for. Audi is working on it with the e-tron, I think. Is the e-tron the car or the self-driving technology?
Not sure.
And Waymo, Google, that we talked about earlier. As you know, and we mentioned, Tesla is burning through a lot of money, but he keeps putting rabbits out of the hat to survive. He's really good at that, and also he's been making a lot of statements. A lot of these statements might catch up with him, and some of these statements might be considered material misstatements. So,
well, for it just is an example of that, right? If you look at the end of so if you look at the end of 2019 estimates, right, where you're getting about what is it right now in sales, they're talking about $2 a share, where just a year ago this was about $6.50 a share. And the I'm just reading an article right now about that.
The predicted $6 EPS.
I think it's for sales. Oh, no, I'm sorry. And then there's also earnings estimates. Quote, it's been volatile, but it went nowhere. When we shorted the earnings estimates for 2020, it was $20 a share. Now it's $4 to $5 a share. That's from Jim Chanos.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sorry, that's earnings per share. Yeah. Yeah, that's earnings per share. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're burning through cash. That's the thing. And they have operating issues. They have financial issues. They keep making the forecast. They're saying a lot of things. They're saying a lot of promises. They're not meeting these numbers. They have all these things coming out in the next couple of years. Didn't explain how they were going to pay for it. And, you know, as you know, that Musk, he's not a fan of short sellers. He said they're jerks who wants us to die. That's his quote. they will, you know, short seller will constantly trying to make up false rumors, amplify any negative rumor. So, I don't know. He takes it personally. He says it's hurtful, but... it's an interesting battle.
Also,
short that stock.
You know, you had said something earlier where one part of the bull thesis was that you know, they're so far ahead with things. Except Chanos has actually said that Tesla has been a laggard in autopilot. Like, it's even behind GM with their cruise technology. And then
what he's been saying.
Yeah. And he also said it's even behind, like, if you look at Google's Waymo, which we've talked about, it's even behind them as well.
Yeah. But is that a case for a short seller? Like,
it's a lot of things, right? You know, he also talks about their accounting too. So he has a lot of issues with the way that Tesla reports their gross margins. And he said, basically, they do it. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, they do it differently from the other guys.
Completely. Yeah. So Chanos was saying that their gross margins are probably inflated by 10 points and that their SG&A is probably higher than everyone else's as well.
Yeah.
And then he also says that with the compensation package, that it actually allows him to keep it if he remains chairman but not CEO, essentially if he ends up moving to SpaceX.
Tesla had other CEOs in the past.
Right.
They had a bunch of CEOs in the past. Musk was he's not the first CEO. Like I mentioned earlier, when the founder was CEO for a couple of years.
But it's then it says, I think it's egregious to be able to take that kind of compensation when you're just the chairman and spending all your time in another company, if that's what ends up happening.
It's a lot of money. But what if he accomplishes vision? What if he accomplishes goals?
Yeah, but then he's a major shareholder.
He owns 20% of the company.
Right. So that's, you know, sure, you know, you can be, if you're, it's like, okay, if you own 20% of the company, your payoff is in the stock price. But should you be getting that kind of compensation for having not even being involved in day-to-day activities on top of your 20% position? I think that's ridiculous.
Well, I don't know why they did that. I don't know, because his interests were already aligned. with the shareholders, right?
Well, these are all the things that keep getting brought up by the short sellers, that like Elon Musk isn't this ethical guy. You know, you look at the acquisition of SolarCity, right, which is super sketchy. You look at his compensation package, where it looks like he wants to, you know, probably move. You know, the speculation is he wants to move to SpaceX, and now he can still get paid to be the quote-unquote chairman of the board for Tesla. Just a lot of these things where, you know, do you think Jeff Bezos or Steve Jobs would be pulling things like that? I don't think so.
Do you think that money? I mean, I don't think he needs more motivation, right? Like, I don't think. I don't know why. It's a really interesting. I mean, that itself could be its own podcast. This whole compensation package that is very, very unique out there. It's the biggest one I ever heard of.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he already owns 20% of the company. His interests already align with the company. He doesn't have to stay, right? Is that what you say? He doesn't have to stay as CEO.
Yeah, he can just be the chairman and still get it.
Okay, but it's all about Tesla achieving their goals and everything.
Sure, which I have no problem with.
Yeah. Let's play. So the short seller's case is very clear, right?
Yes.
Like Channel said that Tesla ticks all the boxes of a dream short trade. Mm-hmm. It has everything you need, but the stock is not going down. It's not going down. Now, what do you think it's going to – it needs a catalyst, right? It needs something. It needs, you know, either they don't make any more money, either the SEC gets involved, must do something crazy. What is it going to take? Because everything is laid out. Everything is clear. It's all public information. But this stock, nothing hurts this thing. Nothing.
You got to imagine it will be something that impacts – their ability to raise capital combined with them not making money and Elon Musk consistently being wrong about projections. I mean, you got to imagine it's going to be some version of that.
Maybe. But now you're talking about his shareholder base. His shareholder base, it's not me and you where we look is, you know, where's the free cash flow? Is it profitable? Where's the value? Where's the moat? His shareholder base is a totally different kind of people. They don't care about profits for now, anyway. They haven't showed it. They don't care about.
That's the keyword for now. I think you might be more confident in their shareholder base than I am. I think at some point, if they keep not making money and their debt continues to get downgraded, you got to imagine it will impact the equity at some point, and then they're really fucked.
I don't know. His shareholders, his followers, seems to be immune to profit. They're immune to good governance. You know what I mean? It seems like nothing. The guy could say crazy stuff on Twitter,
Market, but at the end of the day, the stock market still tends to be generally pretty efficient. And I don't think you could be the biggest fanboy in the world, but you got to remember a lot of these, most of the trading volume in the stock market is not from individual, you know, small investors. It's from, you know, funds and machine trading.
Robots.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think, actually, I do know. I'm pretty sure I know that you can be the Tesla cultist alone can't keep the stock propped up. That's what I think on that. I don't think that's possible over you know.
But that was the argument 5 years ago.
Yeah, except this is where I would say what breaks the argument is it still looks like there's a chance that Tesla could, you know, be free cash flow positive in the rather short term. And if that starts happening, you could have a reversal of all this potentially.
Well, he saved profits in Q3.
I know. He said free cash flow positive in Q3.
So we'll know at Christmas.
Right. And either you get a nice Christmas present or you get a lump of coal.
Battery. Actually delivers, right? If he becomes profitable Q3 and Q4, then what happens to the shorts? Are we you know, that this still doesn't justify where the price is today.
No, it doesn't, but it doesn't justify a zero anymore either. Got to remember, there's short sellers that think this is a fraud and that this is going to zero.
Yeah, I know. So, and it's, I mean,
see.
It's remarkable what some companies, some, like,
look at Amazon. Some companies. Brian, look at Amazon as an example, right? If Amazon, you know, Amazon clearly, see, I don't like when Elon compares himself to Amazon because, or when the Elon Musk apologize, you know, what do you want to call him? The ones that make excuses for him, right? They always say, well, it's like Amazon and, you know, we're investing for the future. The difference though is that Amazon can make a profit if they wanted to. They just don't. Because they
reinvest their money.
Yeah, and Amazon currently has a fantastic business and a great business and a viable product. You can't say that Tesla has the same kind of corporate sustainability that Amazon does. It just doesn't right now. Like that's not my opinion. That's just, it does not have a sustainable structure right now. Amazon does. That's to me very black and white. That is not a nuanced opinion of mine. And for Amazon, right, when they've sold, you know, when they've been quote unquote propped up by the equity investors because of the potential future growth, you know, it's shown that they can. So while they aren't making a lot of money in net profit right now, they have great cash flows, and at some point they will have great profits. So that you could say that price and that high artificial PE ratio was actually justified, probably. Where with Tesla, you can't say that yet, and you might never be able to say that. And if they start making a little money and things change, you know, we could revisit. And if they continue to not make money and there's no structural change, then it might look like it's not sustainable. I think it just comes down to that at a very simple level.
Well, you need cash to survive. It's the blood of a company.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, that's what you need. It's interesting. I know a lot of people say it's a zero. But I don't think it can go to zero. I mean, if it goes to zero, I'll buy all the shares. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
somebody, you know, will buy this company.
It would be a zero. Well, so just because it's the equity, so I don't think that's what they mean, right? It's obviously there's some intrinsic worth there, right? Obviously, they have a good product.
The cars, they have a great brand.
The cars are great. I love the cars. Like
the cars, the brand.
Yeah. So
it wouldn't be where it is today without the brand and the
of
cool
course,
rooster.
Of course. So saying the equity is worth zero doesn't mean the company is worth zero, right? I mean, the debt holders would do something with it, you know? Like Toys R Us, right? Is not worth zero. Just the equity is worth zero. There was value in some of the Toys R Us stores.
So if the company, no, for sure. If the company, let's say, struggles, right? Like Tesla goes down, I don't know, 50, 30 bucks. I think somebody would just go out and buy him out. You know, I think somebody will come out and look, you're going to be part of us now. Toyota, GM, somebody with the cash.
I think that's a very, very possible scenario. And even in that scenario, the shorts make money.
Well, from where they are now, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, the stock's down 90%.
It depends where you get in, right?
Right. So if I'm saying the stock is down 90% from here and Google buys them out at a 20% premium, you've made a good deal of money as a short seller.
So there's two money. What will keep this company alive is profit and raising money, right? That he needs.
You're talking about as a standalone company.
As a what, sorry?
As a standalone company you're talking about.
As a standalone company, right? So what does Musk need to do now? Well, he needs to show that he can actually make a profit for once. He needs to do that. He needs to make cars, you know, on a sustainable basis. So that's one thing. And he say that he's not going to have to go to the capital market, but I don't know. Why not? You should just go. Take advantage of it. Take advantage of the very generous capital market, the stock price that the shareholders are offering to you. And if you do that, then one, you're not going to have that conversation for a couple of years. You're not going to have to explain every quarter, I'm not going to need cash. Are we going to be profitable? I'm going to, you know, you get the monkey off your back. And
yeah, I don't know. I mean, and if I was Elon, I'd be selling a shit ton of stock right now and take a short-term stock hit personally.
Here's the thing, right? I read some stuff on that. If he's investigated by the SEC, can he do that?
No.
And we don't know if he's being investigated, right?
Well, that could be. I mean, that's interesting. You bring that. It could be a possible. And we did talk about this. For full disclosure, we did talk about this last week. But you know, I was saying to you, maybe they're going in through some SEC investigation, and there's a total freeze on that. It's possible. I would put that probability in, you know.
And investigation takes times and months. Yeah. Now for the SEC, and now they're doing, like, I know the SEC now, they're going after everything because they missed out on so many things. You know, they missed out on Madoff, they missed out on whistleblowers. They don't want that kind of publicity, you know what I mean? Every time they do something bad, everybody goes after them. And now they have the whistleblowers, they have the bad publicity, they have the leakers. You know, like Shannon said, you got all the ingredients here. You know, if I ask you, Eric, make me the perfect short, you'll give me all the ingredients. You'll make a nice recipe. And then Tesla sort of fit that recipe, the mold of it.
They sort of do, yeah.
And, you know, we can't say it's a fraud. We don't know, but it shares elements of companies that were fraudulent.
Yeah.
That we can say, but to be clear, we're not calling it. Well, a lot of people are calling it a fraud. I'm not comfortable calling it a fraud because I don't have the evidence. But we know I'm more careful. But it shares elements of companies that have engaged in fraudulent activity. So just to be clear, so I don't know. I have conflicted feelings here. You know, in one hand, I admire what Elon Musk has accomplished and what he wants to accomplish. And we need more people like him that chase their crazy dreams and that make these things a reality. On the other hand, I can't invest in that company. I find it uninvestable. You know, the rational side in me is saying, this can't go on. You know, it just can't go on. Like,
yeah.
That's the rational side of me saying this company's going to need more money. But also, like I said, I'm conflicted. I don't want him to fail. So it's kind of funny. I don't have that feeling about most companies. I don't have, you know, I see a company, I'm like, I don't care. It's either going to go to zero or up or, you know, invest or don't invest. But
well, the beautiful thing of the stock market is you don't ever have to actually have, you know, you don't have to make a decision. Beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I know most companies would have failed by now to what Musk and Tesla goes through.
Yeah.
They would have failed. I mean, just look what happened to the CEO of Papa John, the founder, the chairman, the founder, I think. Say some not nice words in public, and he was fired. So, you know, no, Elon didn't say what he said, but Elon Musk said a lot of things publicly that most CEOs would have been fired or would have to resign by now.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you one thing you could do if you wanted to play this in a safer way potentially would be, you know, you put a very small portion of your net worth into some, like, you know, the longest dated put options you could find for Tesla.
Yeah.
You just buy some.
Yeah, I wonder how much they are. No, I don't have them in front of me. That'd be, I'll have to look them up when we're done. I have to, yeah, they're probably, I don't know, I'd like to, do you have a strike price in mind? Like, I don't know if they have them.
I'm looking right now. If you just, like, on Yahoo Finance, you can
So let's see there's 2020. So they have 2020.
That's the oldest?
Looks like it.
Huh. Let's see if I can find them. Let's see what the strike price are. So 320. Tesla is at 300. It's up 4% today. That's crazy. All right, where are we at?
The January 17th, 2020.
Okay, I got 2020 right here. The computer's a little slow here. No, no, it's not coming up. Oh, there we go. Right, I got a strike price. They have a, okay, so they have a strike price of 350. The biggest one I see is 350. And
this is for 2020?
Yeah. January 17, 2020, the strike price is 350. And it's trading for 67 and change, 68.
What site are you on?
Nasdaq.com.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, what about you?
I was on Yahoo Finance. I'm on Yahoo Finance. It's like completely different. Yeah.
Is that right, huh?
Yeah. Let me go. I'm going to look at Nasdaq option change. I trust Nasdaq website more than.
Well, oh, yeah. Yahoo Finance?
Yahoo Finance. Fuck, man. When I was, even like 10 years ago, it was amazing. It's so clunky and slow and has worse data on it now, it seems like, than.
Yeah, I can't figure them out. I mean, I go to it, but I don't go to it for news. It's good to get the stock price.
Oh, I never go for
you can't rely on the numbers.
The news is horrible on that site.
I don't get what they're doing. I really don't get.
Yeah, like all they had to do was nothing, and it would have been great.
Well, do you know which one I'm upset about? It's Google Finance. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, yeah, that's another fuck up.
It was fine. It wasn't fine. It needed some upgrade, but
yeah,
they killed it. They really killed it. It's still around, but it's not. I don't even know what it is.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
They probably have non-financial people on their design team, is what it is.
Oh, it's probably the most hated Google product.
That's awful. Okay,
if you work on Google Finance at Google, you're in a doghouse. That's probably what it was.
Yeah. So anyway, you're looking at the 350s. Is that the strike?
Yeah, I was looking at the most expensive one. 350, 2020, $67. So people are bullish. Because, right, you need a stock price plus the premium to make money.
Where are you getting $67 from? Oh, wait, are you in Canadian dollars? Is that maybe?
What do you see?
I see the 350s. For the 20
yeah. puts, how much are they?
The bid ask is 94.95.40.
That's the put.
Yeah.
Okay, you're looking at put. I'm looking at calls.
Oh, I was looking at puts. I'm saying you buy a put option to basically have a short on it.
Ah, is that what Yahoo Finance had too? The same numbers?
No. No surprise, right?
Yeah. All right, Jenny. Okay, yeah, the puts is $94. That's right. The bid and ask $94.95. So, in the last is $100. So let's say $100.
And this way, if you're wrong about the short, you only lose a very small amount of capital.
Huh. It's still, man. It's very speculative. It's not something I'm comfortable to play with.
Yeah, no, me neither. Just was putting it out there.
It's do you know who's another famous bear? Is David Einhorn.
I'm very aware of that one, yeah.
And he's getting killed.
he's getting killed on like everything. I actually kind of feel bad for him, honestly.
He's having a bad year.
He's having a bad decade.
So what's going on with all these genius investors? The list is so long.
Mm-hmm.
except for Warren Buffett, for somehow he still managed to do well. But all the other guys.
Hold on. It's not. Did I lose you?
No, I'm right here. I'm waiting for you to finish your sentence.
Oh, weird. I'm getting like a call.
I don't have anything.
Strange. Okay. You don't hear that?
No. No.
Huh. I don't know what that's about.
What do you hear? I don't hear.
I thought someone was.
I hear. You might. Your podcast might picked up my daughter.
Okay.
Because I'm in my basement, the office. She's upstairs, but I don't think I can hear her. But if your podcast pick it up, the whole world will hear her.
Right. No worries.
I'll tell her, you're on a podcast now, baby.
Right?
Yeah, she's going to be 4-year-old and already on a podcast.
That's funny.
I was saying David Hainhong, Bill Ackman, the guy from Third Point, Third Value,
Dan Loeb?
Dan Loeb, Bruce Berkowitz. The list goes on of these very famous, Bill Miller, etc., very famous investors that people follow.
Yeah.
And they just can't do it anymore. They just can't hit the home runs. They don't have this. Their returns are miserable. And these are not dumb people. Right, David Einhorn's not dumb.
No,
he had a lot of success, and he's very smart. And I read some of his letters, and he's not stupid about Tesla. But everything's kind of moving against him. It's so weird. It's a very weird world. In that way, where here's a company that we believe is undervalued. Here's a company with great assets that really the market. Is undervaluing it, and it's almost like this market these days doesn't care about profit. It's just show me the growth, show Wall Street where you're gonna grow, and
Wall Street how much of a disruptor I could be.
Yeah, who cares about profits? Who cares about free cash flow? Just. I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be sustainable. Well, part of me is saying it can't go on.
Here's the other argument to that, right? Which is, technology is continuously getting better at a faster and faster rate, right? And it keeps accelerating, right? So you could make the argument that we are going through a time right now that is even bigger than the Industrial Revolution, and right. So
things are moving way too fast.
Right. So if that's the case, and you have certain companies that will have certain competitive advantages for whatever reason, then maybe the market valuing disruptors is actually very, very justified, and the reason that you don't have a bubble. In these disruptors, and when I say but don't have a bubble, you don't have every single person talking about it like you did in the 90s. This is just an alternative theory that I've come up with, is that people have a fear of the tech bubble. Like everyone still remembers the tech bubble of the 90s. Mm-hmm. So they're all so they all think they're smart by and us value guys, we think we're so smart avoiding these potential bubble stocks. But the thing is that they don't have the psychology of these bubble stocks, right? Where, like my taxi, your taxi driver isn't talking to you about how they just made a shit ton of money on Amazon day trading it or something, right? Like you don't have that mania like you've had in other bubbles. So maybe we look back and say, oh my God, all these disruptors were super undervalued. Here's, let's look at a company like Google or Facebook, and it's just going to grow for like 20% a year indefinitely for the next, however many years. And we were able to get these companies at 50 times earnings or something. Like, and then that actually ends up being really cheap. So,
It's well, But I don't think Wall Street has that much of a long-term vision.
I'm just giving the alternative view. It's not my view.
Yeah. There's some good points there.
It's just things I think about, and they're interesting to talk about because, you know, even I generally find that most investments I look at are not cheap right now, and maybe even more on the expensive side. But you got to remember, we have a very low interest rate environment in the United States at the moment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, everyone quote unquote knows that interest rates are going to rise, but what if they don't rise? And what if they just come back down 2 years later and it causes a recession, and then we have another 20 years of a low interest rate environment, and then these market multiples maybe were cheap. But, you know, there's all these unknowns and all these things that can happen. I get concerned when people say we know interest rates are going to rise for the next few years, or we know. It's like, you don't know. You don't know.
The Fed doesn't even know.
Right. When you say we're 9 years into a bull market, therefore we should be remaining cautious. Well, what if we have a 20-year bull market? We've seen that before.
The Fed doesn't even know what they're going to do with the rates.
Right. I know.
They don't know. So yeah. How do we know?
Yeah.
They meet up for like 2 days and they talk about it.
This is why I don't give a shit about, you know, the macroeconomic stuff with investing, because it's too hard. And not only like it's like you have to not only be right about the macro thesis, right? Think about this for a second. You have to be right about the macro thesis, then you have to have your timing correct, right? Which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually have to correctly understand the right security to make you money. Because you can even have the timing correct and the thesis correct, and then you pick the wrong fucking thing.
Well, that's a top-down approach, right?
Yeah, and it's why I avoid it. Like, that to me is so – it's way too hard. Way too hard.
It's I know I can't do it either. I don't know how. There's way too many factors.
Yeah.
And you know, from the bottom up, you can find – good companies in a crappy environment and make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because your money, your investments can be more affected by the operations of the company than a movement in interest rates.
Yeah.
But yeah, most people will focus on the politics and what the inflation number is going to be, what GDP number is going to be. The GDP number that was like, what, 6 months ago? Everybody has, I don't know, but it takes different people to make a market, and
right, exactly.
You know, every time you buy it from somebody that's willing to sell to you for X amount of reasons. It's a zero sum game. Somebody thinks it's, you know, we're talking about Tesla. When somebody sells it to you to 320, and let's say I'm buying it, I think the better it's going to be better. It's going to make me richer. It's going to make me rich, right? People who are getting into Tesla today, you know, Elon Musk made some big promises that, and these people believe they're going to be rich.
Maybe some of them. Maybe them. Some are just trading it for a quarter, right? Or they're going to play the news off the next quarter. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, you probably have a lot of that too. You have a lot of. You know, traders, speculators, just betting on the movement of the stock. But these are not investors. I don't. They do that for every stock. I don't count them in.
I'm sure there's hedging going on and as well. And so, you know, there's a whole host of things that could factor into the trading volume every day.
For sure. And. Yeah, so how do you think it's going to play out?
No idea.
We're two hours in? I don't know. We're
2 hours and 20 about, but
2 hours and 20?
Yeah, I was actually just going to say, was there any other things you wanted to bring up around Tesla?
I talked a lot.
Yeah.
I talked a lot more. I didn't know I could talk that much. No, I mean, you know, just to wrap it up, I want Elon Musk to succeed. I want him to accomplish his vision. I want him to make cool cars. And at the same time, I don't know what that makes me, but I can't invest in a share because I'm a valuation guy. I'm a numbers guy. And I can't work out the numbers. I just can't. And like we say, we talk about perfection in the price. You know, it has – I find Tesla, it doesn't have – I don't know how I'm going to make money with it. So if I buy it today, I just can't work out the numbers. Right? How is this number going to come up to 320? And we kind of talked about that earlier, so it sounds too good. I might revisit when it goes down to $100. Maybe we can have another podcast about that. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm just the guy watching the fight right now, and it's a really, really good fight between, bigger than reality guy Elon Musk and short seller that want him to fail and go to jail.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting in the next couple months. I mean, Tesla, we're talking about every day here. There's something going on every day. It's going to be interesting to see if the SEC gets involved. He needs to raise more money. Is the model too profitable? So, it's going to be really, really fun to see what's going on, and I'm going to be following it.
Yeah. I wouldn't touch this shit with a 10-foot pole. That's all I'll say.
No. I mean, look, people are losing their career over this. David Hanhorn is people – I mean, he's a smart investor, and he's having – he can't put his head around that.
Well, as you remember, the market can stay irrational longer than someone can stay solvent.
There we go. So there's some wisdom in that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You want to end with that?
I think we should.
That's a good one.
All right. Brian, it was a pleasure to have you on, as always. And
it was my pleasure to be back on.
Yeah, and I'll put all your information and your website and Seeking Alpha articles onto the show notes as well. Brian, for your listeners, Brian's a fantastic writer and does some incredible work both on his website, on his blog, and on Seeking Alpha, and highly recommend that you follow his stuff and subscribe to his page on Seeking Alpha.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
Brian. I really appreciate it.
Of course. All right. Well, have a great rest of your evening up in Canada, eh?
You too. You enjoy your summer.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too, Brian.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.